This is Church Tech Profiles, Episode 7 for the week of September 28th, 2020, Dan Olson. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I'm Van Mechke, and before we start with the interview, I just have a couple of housekeeping things that we always need to do. First of all, please go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, and if you could, leave a positive comment about the podcast, that would be fantastic. And also, go over to the socials, Instagram and Facebook, it's Church Tech Profiles, and Twitter, it's Church Tech Pro, because of course you always run out of characters on Twitter. You can also go to the website, thesoundbooth.com. That's where all the podcasts are, is at thesoundbooth.com. And if you want to reach me directly, please email me at van, at thesoundbooth.com. And I will, I'll respond back to you, I promise. Or you can hit me up by messaging me on any of the social instant messages. So I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you sharing. And we've got some great interviews. Today, we've got a great interview with Dan Olson. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So on with the interview. Well, welcome to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I am Van Mechke, and I'm super happy here today to have Dan Olson with us today. How's it going, Dan? How are you doing?
Good, good. Hey, everybody out there. Thanks for listening.
Dan Olson is the technical director out in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and at one of our favorite churches, Prairie Lakes Church. So we've been talking a little bit about getting together and doing a podcast and things like that. I think we talked about it back at Philo. We're actually
is that this year? Is that last year? Which year is it?
I'm not sure anymore. You know, really, honestly, during this time, if you're listening to this 5 years from now, this was during the whole COVID-19 pandemic. We recorded this, so there, time has become like irrelevant for some weird reason. The thing that bums me out is that all of y'all who are in production, full-time production, it's got to just seem like Groundhog Day for the most part.
Oh, I think so. I think so. For most people, it just repeat. I literally, right before this podcast kicked off, I was down programming lights for our online recordings that we do. And, you know, we do 4-week chunks at a time. So it's 12 songs and it's just program this song, just repeat.
Yeah. But that's actually really smart though, because at least you get some time, because at least you're just not doing it every single week, right? Well, a lot of churches are, but so you guys do, like for the music part, you guys do 4 weeks at a time.
We do like a sermon series at a time. So it depends on how long the sermon series is. And then we'll do that amount. You know, a typical sermon series is 3 weeks to 4 weeks for our church. And so, we do kind of that whole series. We plan it out. We plan the songs, we pick the specials and whatever, and then we record them all.
Does your pastor do all the speaking, or does he still do the speaking per week, each week?
He still does the speaking per week. And we've got kind of a teaching team. There's three teaching pastors that sort of rotate through, but they do like the Thursday before is when they do their recording for the weekend of.
So they get a little time to do this. It's not all, they don't have to like have 4 weeks of sermons prepared.
Right. So, sometimes getting them to do it the week of is challenging enough, but they've gotten really good at it.
It's really interesting to see, you know, I've been talking to so many tech directors, production people and all stuff. And it's just been really interesting to see how every church kind of has their own like game plan of how they're pulling this off. You know, some people do multiple things. Like I have talked to several churches where they don't necessarily have music for specific weekends, but they'll just go in at the beginning of the month and the band will just record like 12 songs, 15 songs, whatever. And they will literally insert those wherever they end up wanting to insert them, you know, like each song, they just go, oh, we can pull this song and this song and this song. The background's the set's the same. They're all wearing the same clothes. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah. I mean, nobody remembers.
It's like worship a la carte.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Exactly. And then the pastor will just come in and do their thing you know, whatever. So, and then we've got some, I was talking to a church the other day that they record all the worship, but then the pastors still preach live, on the weekends.
Yeah.
So the pastors will preach two or three or four times live on the video feed. But the worship is recorded. So they'll just like, they'll play the worship and then the pastor will come on. It's just like a really,
but then.
So it's kind of all over the map. And, we also, talked to a church that they're going to continue to, do the, a more intimate online service online that's pre-recorded. Once they get back into the big auditorium, they're still going to do the big auditorium things, all, you know, campuses, whatever. And that'll be one set, but everybody's, but they're going to do this intimate worship separately and just keep recording it during the week.
Yeah.
They like it. They think it works well online. And so they're not going to go back. So it's really interesting just to see what everybody is doing. And, I think it's, I don't know how you guys are, but it's a lot of people I'm talking to seems like it's a time to figure it all out again. Just kind of look at everything you guys do.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I was talking with our, head of our creative department, and this was back like the almost literally the first week that everything shut down. You know, we did services Saturday night, and then Saturday night at 9 o'clock, everything shut down. We were not doing Sunday morning services. We were off. And I remember that Monday or Tuesday, it was kind of an all call, everybody within the worship production team from all of our campuses, everybody jump on Zoom and let's figure out, hey, what do we want to do? What does the online service look like? And is that something that we can do that's sustainable? Well, at the time we didn't know what sustainable meant. Is that 3 weeks, 4 weeks? And so, you know, every kind of 3-4 weeks, we would do a check-in of like, hey, is this still working? What do we need to change? What do we need to alter? And we kind of got it down to a really good process, even to the point where we're involving volunteers on the online service. We're bringing in volunteers that can help run the cameras and help run lighting and lyrics. And then we kind of multi-track everything out, do multiple takes on the cameras. And then our creative department spends, you know, a few days to a week of editing and chopping it all down. And that's gotten to be a really good process. And we're still doing live services again. We've kind of ramped back up and we're doing full production again here at our main Cedar Falls campus. And we still have a full online service. And that's probably what we'll continue to offer for the foreseeable future. So you never know. You don't know what's going to happen or how soon the governor's going to say, hey, you got to lock stuff down again.
Right.
So we want to be prepared either way.
And are your people receiving that really well? I mean, does it seem like the people who want to come back are coming back, and the people who want to stay, not come back for whatever reason, are they still staying engaged and all that?
Yeah, definitely. We've got a very large audience that watches online, or congregation, I guess, online congregation. Is that a thing?
Yeah, it is now.
Yeah. So we have them that, there's a very large part of that watch online, and that's kind of their church and they prefer that. They're, you know, they may be comfortable going out in public every now and then, but for church stuff, they're just more comfortable still sitting at home and watching online at home. And we have been coming back. We've seen a lot more people starting to come back, but I think one of the areas that has been the most challenging for us is how do we do children's ministry again, and, you know, trying to involve that again. So that's been our sort of more hot topic, is getting children's ministry back involved, and, you know, the different ministries outside of just weekend services. And I think once we start doing more of that, we'll start seeing a little more boost in attendance on our weekends.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's a weird, you know, it's a lot of it is just, has everything to do with how people feel, like,
yeah,
you know. And I'm for that. I'm like, look, if you want to get back out into society, whatever the appropriate thing is to do, you should probably do it. And if you have health issues and you don't feel comfortable, then stay, then then stay home. And the church just, I think the smartest thing a church can do is to say, look, we're cool with that. And you do what you need to do. And we're going to, we still want to be with you. And we still want to, you know, navigate that with you. And every church is different because every church has a different demographic and every church has different needs and all that stuff, you know? Yeah. I mean, you got churches like North Point that's not going to, basically, they said, you know what, Andy Stanley says he's not going to open up till 2021.
Right.
And they just made that decision that that's what they're going to do because they want to do it a certain way. And I think that's really great. I think if that's, you know, if that's what the leadership believes God's telling them to do, then, you know, that's what they should do. You know, we forget a lot of times when we're on church staffs that we're here for the people, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing. We call ourselves a no matter church, and that, you know, that we go after no matter people, that no matter who you are, where you've been, what you've done, you can look for God in our church. And that's what we want to have. And a part of that is that we have to make it feel safe. And so, you know, we did a little bit slower onboarding with coming back out of the pandemic and out of the shutdown. We probably waited longer than some people wanted us to wait. But even with that, there were people who still said, hey, you're just doing it too soon. It's too much too soon.
Right.
And we know that there's people on both ends of that spectrum that are going to be coming in through our door. And we want to make sure that both of those groups of people feel safe coming back to church.
Right.
In whatever way that looks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it looks different everywhere. So, Well, hey, you know, we could talk, obviously we could talk about what's happening right now all day long, but, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is just to kind of just say, you know, okay, so what, aside from all this stuff is, kind of, you know, what's Prairie Lakes, you know, what's the size of the church, campuses you have and your teams and all that good stuff. What do you oversee and your teams and all that stuff in the, you know, in the theoretical world of churches actually happening, you know, as it should be and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we are, again, you mentioned we're in Cedar Falls, Iowa, which, you know, if you're not from the Midwest, you'll probably never even think about where Cedar Falls, Iowa is or what Iowa even is. You know, we're flyover country, you know, and that's how it is. It's the Midwest. And that's something that, we kind of know, but, God has us here. And that's why we're here, is because we know that nobody else is coming to Iowa to do a revival. And especially right now, there's nobody coming.
Hey, some of the greatest churches in the world are in that corridor right there, in my opinion. So,
yeah, thank you. Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, Prairie Lakes Church, we're a multi-site church. We have, I've got to do a count here. So we have a church in Osage, New Hampton, Fort Dodge, Independence, and Grinnell. And, Cedar Falls is our sort of, we call it the, you know, it's, some people will say it's the main campus or the big campus, but really it's just, Cedar Falls was the first Prairie Lakes campus. You know, we don't really have like a, this is the main thing, because we're so spread out, you know, across the state of Iowa, that, you know, our campus out in Fort Dodge, well, that is the main campus because they're the main church in Fort Dodge. And so, and they've got a campus pastor at each of those locations. There's typically, three or four staff, for the worship and production side of stuff. There's usually one guy who's, kind of the point person for worship and production. Most of the time they're mainly a musician with some technical skills that they then kind of pick up and learn along the way. But we do a lot of volunteer leadership and a lot of volunteer positions that lead on the weekends. So it's not really up to the staff to lead. It's up to the staff to support those, volunteers that are leading. And that's been a model that we've really been pushing and growing towards, even here at the bigger campus. That's something that I really push for. I want to make sure that, that I'm available on the weekends, but that I'm not needed necessarily, you know, I'm kind of the backstop to it.
Right. Yeah. So you do have some staff though, but you guys kind of serve, because you're so spread out, are you you know, you are over all of the campuses as far as tech goes. Ish.
Well, no, not necessarily. No, they know they can call me. But as far as like, being in charge of their tech, they're the ones that are really in charge of their tech. If they have a question, they're very welcome to call me. You know, they've got my email, they got my phone number. And it's been one of those, things where there's, because we're so spread out, it's difficult for me to actually make it to their campus to help them out with anything directly.
What's your closest, you know, what's the closest campus that you have? How far away is it by driving?
Closest campus for me driving distance is 45 minutes.
So, yeah, so it's not really,
it's not close. Yeah.
economical to, call you and have you drive out there when there's a catastrophe happening.
Right. Yeah. So they've got to be good at kind of troubleshooting their stuff. So we did do, as we've sort of implemented systems and as we implemented, sort of how we launch a campus, we've gotten that refined down really well to where we sort of have a, you know, a joke, it's called the Prairie Lakes package, you know, with the speakers and the soundboard and projectors and lighting, we kind of have a kit that we put together that's what we put in, and that makes it easier for troubleshooting then. You know, right. we kind of know how long it's going to take to install. We know what the bugs are going to be or what the quirks are going to be. And then it's easier to then train them up on that install side of, hey, here's your gear, here's how it works, and then go from there. So we've done that sort of universal package with our last probably 3 or 4 campus launches that we've done.
Right. Yeah. And do you train there when you launch a campus, or do you train at, you know, your main campus and then they just go there? Or, and what's the makeup of the campuses? Are they all portable? They permanent? What's the makeup of them?
We did the portable thing for a while. We've kind of gone away from that model.
Yeah. It's really hard.
It's extremely difficult to set up and to tear down, the wear and tear on the gear and the wear and tear on the volunteers.
Yeah.
It was not good. Nobody wants to get up at 5 a.m. to unload a trailer in the dead of winter in Iowa.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
I launched many campuses that were mobile, and I did not enjoy it.
So yeah, we do, we kind of do some training, here at the Cedar Falls campus. There's a few people that, you know, are either volunteers that I've trained up over the years, you know, that have been, you know, they started out as a video director, and then I moved them up to a service director, and then I moved them up to a weekend service producer. And then, you know, they find out, hey, we're launching a campus in this town, and they go, hey, I kind of want to do that. I want to be the guy out there helping them get this started, you know, and training up their people and bringing their people on board. And so we just instill that sort of training and passing on of knowledge, to those people. And then, you know, then once their gear is installed and going, they'll do a soft launch for about 3 weeks. And it's kind of their training ground for those 3 weeks where they're going through setup and tear down and playing the message video back and setting up their worship team. They're kind of doing it just in house. And then they'll do a campus launch with sort of their core group of people who have said, hey, we're bought into this church here in this community. And then we'll actually do a full public launch where we're inviting the public into it then.
Right. Right. Now that totally makes sense. So what's your background? How did you get into all this? How did you get suckered into, well, let's go back further.
Yeah. I mean, no, it really is kind of that though.
Very few people go into this willingly at the very beginning. You kind of just fall into it. But, how did you start out in AV? What was your entry into all this?
Yeah, I got suckered into it fairly young on, and I'm going to call it that. So my dad was kind of a tech guy. He was an electrician at John Deere here in Iowa, which is a big, you know, it's kind of a big deal. And he was also in a band. And so he had guitars and amps and all this stuff around the house, which, you know, that's every nerdy kid's dream is to figure out how an amplifier works. And yep. I joke, my first PA was the Shure Vocal Master. So some of you old guys awesome. Listen to this.
Yeah. No, that's,
you'll know what that is.
Absolutely. As a, probably and, one of the first, for one of the first things that I was that and a Tapco mixer. Those were like the first two things.
Yeah. So I had those sitting around the house, you know, they were just there. Dad had a collection of stuff in the basement and, I started tinkering with that stuff and figuring out how it worked. And, he was the local sound guy in our small town. Anybody that needed anything sound wise, he would go and set it up. And so 4th of July fireworks, we would set up the PA for it. Sunday service out in the park, we would set up the PA for it. You know, a local band doing a show, we would set up the PA for it. So, I would help out with that. And, I think my first memory actually helping and feeling like I was actually contributing was, we would set up for this thing called the Spring Swing Show, which was this variety show in town. And it was in this solid concrete block wall, brick building, great, great acoustics.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's sounds like high fidelity right there.
It was this, it was this old wood stage, but it was crammed in. It was kind of wedged into the walls and you couldn't really get to one side or the other. You had to go underneath the stage to run the wires. Well, my dad's looking at me going, "Hey, you're about the right size. Take this cable, crawl under the stage and then hand it to me on the other side." And I was probably 5-6 years old, but that was what I did. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I could help out. And so, you know, that was one thing that was just instilled in me in a young age was just volunteering and helping out. And so kind of grew up doing that and kept doing more and more of that. You know, even as it got into middle school and high school, I was the first one to raise my hand to sign up to help run sound for the local play or run sound for the musical or whatever it was. And got to the point where I was looking at what I wanted to do for school. And I kind of said, well, I'm doing what I want to do for a living, but I'm just doing a volunteer. How do I get paid to do this?
Right. Yeah.
And I'm still trying to figure out how to get paid to do this.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
But the cool part is that was that volunteering aspect was something that was just instilled in me and I loved doing. So, I've done a little bit of all of it. I've done bigger production stuff on the road. I've done recording studio work. You know, and that's actually what my degree is in. That was the only thing I could find a degree with sound production stuff was an associate degree in recording engineering.
Right. So until recently there was nothing else other than that. That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was back in the day where you either were a recording engineer or you had to get I remember everybody that was in theater, they had to get an English degree, which is like the weirdest thing.
Right.
I'm like, well, you're
communications.
Yeah. Or something like that. And I'm like, well, that has nothing to do with what we do. I mean, some of it did, but I mean, for the most part, it's like, you know, now there's tons of places, you know, tons of schools and stuff like that, where you can actually get a degree in this stuff. But that hasn't, that's only been maybe in the last 10, 15 years, it's really gotten bigger. So,
right.
Well, so how did you get involved? How did you get involved with being a TD, like how'd that come about?
Yeah. So that was an interesting one. I, you know, as soon as I kind of hit college and did the recording studio thing, I kind of had this vision of, man, this would be really cool if I could make this, you know, if I could be like the recording engineer in the state of Iowa, you know, like I wanted to be like the guy. That didn't happen. And I moved back here with my recording degree and all these big dreams of, you know, being the guy. And no, you got to kind of start at the bottom.
Yeah.
You got to be the grunt guy for a while. And being a recording engineer early on means you're the guy that gets the coffee.
Yeah.
You don't get to touch a board.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
honestly, it's that way with most, you know, most professions, you know, especially in the arts, you know.
For sure. For sure. But I mean, as we were talking kind of pre-show stuff, you know, I had to be put through that test because I had to be put through to see what kind of a person I was, what was my character and how was I actually going to fit in and work. And, you know, you got to kind of be put through that. So, So my wife and I, we were dating at the time. And one of the things that we had really talked about and prayed about was that I wanted to have a job working with a Christian group and working with a Christian organization doing some good, but I wanted to have it doing live sound or doing production. And I got invited from a local church to go out to Colorado to do a show with them. They were doing a show up in Estes Park up at the YMCA camp. And the production company that was putting on the show that actually provided the gear and everything just so happened, you know, quote unquote, coincidentally, to be looking for a sound guy. And, you know, it was a huge answer to that prayer of, hey, this is something you're looking for, and God provided it. And right. So I started touring and I started going on the road with them, and got connected to a couple churches and got connected to a couple people, just building relationships, because what you're saying, relationships matter.
Yep. It all comes down to relationships.
Yep. It does. And so built some relationships, and it got to a point where my wife and I were, we had our first kid, and it was kind of one of those things where being on the road wasn't such a dreamy job anymore as she's trying to raise.
Funny how that happens.
Yep. And so, again, it kind of came down to praying about, okay, God, what's going on? What's happening? And, you know, basically like, look, if this is going to happen, God, you've got to provide, like, I need you to give me a clear answer. And that very next Sunday, I'm helping out at our church and I'm just wrapping up cables on the stage afterwards. And the worship leader comes up to me and says, hey, you're really good at this stuff. You know, a lot of people, you're well connected. Could you sit on a committee with us to help us find, you know, someone to be in charge of our media program, our media development part, because we need somebody to oversee the tech side and the online stuff and the website. And, you know, we just need somebody to help us look through resumes and look through people to fill that spot.
Right.
And I said, yeah. Do you mind if I put in a resume too?
Yeah.
And,
so, and they didn't think you would, right? They're like, well, we didn't want to ask you. We didn't, you know, like you're too qualified, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Very much that kind of overqualified and like, we can't pay you what you're worth type thing. And,
and you're nope, thinking, God. you have no idea what I'm worth.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so,
because you were touring with a Christian organization, you were making the huge bucks. I mean, you're just raking it in. Yeah. Right?
So. Actually, at that time, I had stopped doing the Christian touring stuff, and I had gone over to the secular world for a little bit. So I was actually making some good money.
So you actually could make a living, right? So you could actually feed your family.
Yeah. Yeah. Feed the family and buy a house and
all. Yeah. The whole time I was touring with Christian bands, my wife was actually being, she was the one paying the bills.
She had to make the money.
Because I wasn't making that much money, you know, so.
No.
I get it. Yep.
Yeah. So that got me involved with doing local church stuff. And then I was out there in Colorado for about a year and a half. And then we kind of got the call to move back to Iowa. And again, God had paved a path already for us that we didn't know and that we didn't see, but he had provided in some big ways and the doors were open and moved back here to Iowa. And that was about 11 years ago now. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and so it's the again with the hardest job you've ever loved, right? This tech director, as Andrew Stone said. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's awesome. So, what do you guys see as the future? I mean, you know, I like to talk to everybody about this kind of stuff because it's really interesting. Every church I think right now has just kind of a different view on. Some people have a game plan. Some churches do not have a game plan. It's really interesting. I mean, even big churches, we've talked to a couple of big churches. I've thought, wow, you guys have no idea what you're going to do like past like next month, like whatever, which I understand because right now nothing makes any sense. But are you guys looking towards whatever the standard operate? I refuse to say the words, you know, about the words that have the word new in them and the words that have normal in them. I hate that phrase. I hate it. I want those words to be stricken from our language when this is all over.
Especially this year.
It's awful. I just said, there's like 20 words that I never want to hear again. Do you guys talk often as in leadership about what you think standard operating procedure is going to be moving forward, just on a long-term basis, or do you guys kind of just go, and then how do you, and then just review every like month or whatever? What are you guys doing about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to even think, you know, a month, you know, month at a time. It's because, you know, where were we a month ago? I mean, 2 months ago, it's so hard to actually think through even a month at a time. So we kind of take things, you know, there is sort of the big view and the big picture of where we're going with stuff. But a lot of the decisions happen kind of week to week. You know, so Monday the leadership team meets and they sit down and kind of chew through, you know, looking at the data, looking at the numbers, looking at the, you know, positive cases, negative cases, whatever numbers you want to look at. It's right. Who knows at this point. But one of the metrics that we really want to look at is, are there people coming back to our weekend services? And is that number increasing? And so, yeah, it has been, so much so to the point where this past week I was busy setting up an overflow room because we want to be able to have space if we get to a spot where we've sort of hit the capacity of reservations that we can take in. We want to be able to still have seats for people if they show up. We don't want to turn people away.
Right.
So we've kind of set up some overflow and set up an overflow room for them to be able to still be able to sit in and be a part of the service, even though they're going to be watching a screen again, which I think everybody's kind of tired of doing. But
yeah, but at least they're able to have a little bit more interaction, you know, than sitting in their living room, which for some people that's been great. It's like the dream come true. You know, I don't have to, you know, I can wear my, wear my shorts, you know, I don't have to wear any pants when I go to church, but I think for a lot of people, you know, they want some kind of contact in a limited capacity.
Yeah. And that's what we've seen, the amount of people that are coming back. The reason they're coming back is because they want to have a message from a live pastor. They don't want to watch another video. They want to have that interaction, even though there's not really any interaction. We're not shaking hands. We're not, you know, passing out offering buckets. We're not doing that stuff. We're, you know, we're being very cautious about that, but we still have a place people can come and sit and be a part of live worship and be a part of a live teaching. And that's been a big thing. That's, people miss that. They want that again. And so we want to be able to provide that safely for people. And so that's kind of what we're looking at. That's our biggest metric, is how do we do this safely? And, you know, I think one of the things that is the biggest thing we're considering now is, you know, hey, we're coming into the fall, and like a lot of other churches, fall kickoff that's huge. You've got student ministry kickoff and women's ministry programming and Bible studies and, you know, all this stuff. How do you do that safely now? You know, now that we've kind of figured out how we do our weekend services safely, how are we doing our midweek stuff safely? And so that's kind of our next thing that we're looking at over the month of September, is how do we sort of onboard these programs back in and do it with, you know, spaced out, distanced seating and tables. And one of the weirdest things is, how do we provide food?
Right.
You can't have a box of donuts everybody can just reach into and grab. You know, it's got to be this prepackaged type stuff. And there's all these questions that are left unanswered. And for us, we've got a big building, but you know, the biggest building, or the biggest room in the building, is our main worship center. And so, you know, I spent all this time building out these other rooms, you know, for these groups to be able to use, and they're not going to be able to use them. Everybody's going to be in the worship center because it's going to be the most spread out, the most open air. And so all of a sudden my worship center is going to be used every day of the week, and I've still got to get it set up for use on the weekend.
Right.
So it's going to get really busy really quick.
Right. Yeah. Plus still having to do all the recording that you guys are doing and all the different stuff like that, you know? So it's very interesting times, that we're having. We just talked to a church, that they actually ended up literally gutting their chapel and building it into, and it's pretty big space. I mean, it'll seat 200. I think it was seating probably 200, which is not huge. I mean, it's not like a huge auditorium, but I mean, it was big.
It's a decent amount.
Yeah. I mean, it's bigger than most churches in America, you know, and they gutted it, literally sprayed everything black and, bringing in lighting and sound diffusion and everything like that. And they're using it for, studio that they can do the online services in. They can do, cause they can do worship as long as it's not huge. You know, they can do four or five, you know, they're like a band and this is like a regular four piece with some singers, and they can have a living room set up for the pastor to speak. They can have a band set up in one corner, you know, that they could flip the cameras around, whatever. And basically they're doing that just as an alternative so that they won't have to, because now their big auditoriums are being used for like what you're talking about. When people come back, they're going to have to use them a lot more. There's going to be a lot more events in there, all this stuff. And so they actually had to literally get rid of a venue to be able to use their other venues more. It's great. It's crazy. And they're just like, we can't keep doing what we're doing over here. We got to have some other place that we can do this simultaneously while we're doing this. And this is never going to end. You know, one of the really interesting things that we're finding is I have talked to so many churches. Oddly enough, a great number of mainline churches, like, you know, Lutheran, Presbyterian, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They're all getting online, you know, putting video systems in there. They're not most of them are like, you know, pan and tilt zoom, you know, very, but good, but they have to be good. And they know that, you know, because they just know that this is never going to change. And a lot of their congregations are never going to come back, especially a lot of the older congregations that are, you know, that do have a concern, you know, about getting sick. They're not going to come back. They're going to need to stay at home and they've still got shut-ins and they've got a lot of people do that. But, you know, the people that are actually at risk are not going to come back to church.
Right.
And they shouldn't.
They're going to stay away.
And they shouldn't. They shouldn't come back to church and take the risk. That's smart. But it's just interesting to see that everybody is now a video church. And mostly everybody is seeing that that's not going to end soon.
Well, you know, and with those churches, you know, I've had conversations, you know, with pastors and with priests, you know, at those churches. I grew up Catholic and my parents are a Catholic church in Colorado. And that's one of the things that they had to decide is, you know, how much can we as the small local church make decisions based off of the doctrine of the bigger church, and how much can we flex with that to make this work? Because, you know, you said the phrase, that group of people isn't coming back to church. Well, they haven't necessarily left church. They're just doing church differently. And they physically won't be able to come back into a building safely probably for a while. Right. And so you still want them to be a part of your church. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that come into that, even coming down to figuring out how to do offering with them, you know, because some of those people that are in that group that can't come back, well, some of those people are some of the most faithful givers that you're going to have in your church.
They absolutely are. And that's not denominational. That's every denomination is like that. Those are the faithful people, you know, for many reasons, you know? It's interesting. I think you guys were already doing video, right? You were already online and you were, so you guys were, and you guys already had like online giving and all that stuff. Kind of what we found is that no matter what the size of the church is, if they had all that stuff in place before, they didn't, they have not struggled. I mean, it's totally been a challenge. It's been a ton of work, all that. I'm not saying that, but they haven't struggled with the swap over very hard, and their giving's been still pretty consistent. And, you know, obviously, anything like this tanks a lot of economies, And so the economy's hurt giving, and on, you know, hurt jobs, hurt giving, the whole shot. But the churches that have, that were kind of prepared for this, not even knowing that this is what they were prepared for, have actually done okay. You know, they've done pretty well for the most part, not all of them, but it's the ones that had no online presence. I think that's been the biggest struggle. And I think that a lot of that is the mainline churches.
And that seems like for us, the learning curve wasn't as steep.
Yeah.
We weren't having to figure out how to operate a camera or how to set up a lighting kit for a DSLR camera. Like we weren't having to figure a lot of that out. And, you know, again, it's Iowa. There's a number of small churches that are well under 200 people, but they're still churches. They still want to do something. And that's something where I try to get out and, you know, offer advice and help where I can with that. And it has been, you know, a PTZ camera and, you know, an encoder take your headphone out of your board and plug it in and you're up and running. Here's what you got.
Well, even, you know, we're telling churches, you know, cause encoder boxes right now, as you know, it's like, you can't buy one. I mean,
no,
even the expensive ones, even the ones that are 1,000, 2,000 or more are in short supply, you know? Mm-hmm. And people are finding out very quickly that the little gamer encoders, you know, OBS encoders and all that stuff, they're not going to really work for an hour long church service. They don't have a clock in them. And the problem, everything starts to drift all over the place, you know, after a little while. And that may work when you're, you know, on Twitch sharing your gaming, but it does not work when you're trying to do a church service or any kind of real broadcasting. And people are finding this out very quickly.
Right.
But
we'll just do shorter church services.
Yeah. So
I think everybody's on board with that.
Well, that's another thing, you know, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but when you can watch, when pastors can actually watch the analytics of where people start to drop off like during the hour, they start to realize that they're, you know, they don't need to do a 45 minute sermon. They gotta land the plane in 30 minutes all in, because people just aren't going to go any farther than that. So it's been, I have a pastor friend that said it was the most humbling thing that he'd ever done in his entire ministry career is look at the YouTube analytics.
Yeah.
And then tracked, like watch the sermon and watch the analytics while he's watching the sermon. And you're like, okay, I'm not as good of a preacher as I thought I was, you know? So wasn't that engaging, but, I think it's been really interesting. And we've just been encouraging people who say, look, if you've got to pre-record the whole thing on your iPhone and then just dump it to YouTube and just play it on Saturday morning or Sunday morning, do that. It's okay. It's all right. Do what you can do and make it as good as you can with the resources that you have. Cause we have a lot of people that we talk to that they can't even afford, like, you know, we have a bunch of packages that are cheap. We have some really inexpensive packages and they can't even afford that. So I just tell them, look, if you're doing this with your iPhone in your pastor's office and you've got somebody that's like playing worship and then they move over and the pastor comes over and speaks right there and that works and you can get that online and your people will engage with that, then just do it. It's okay. It's fine. It's not, you know, I think everybody looks at a lot of these smaller churches, look at the big churches and go, well, we've got to compete with that. And I always say, no, you don't have to compete with that. The thing is that a lot of people are going to watch your small church because that's what they want.
Right.
They don't want a show. They want somebody intimately talking to them about God. They want a connection. Yep. That's what they want. So the same thing that was drawing people to your small little church before is the same thing that's going to draw them to your church online. You know, so do what's you and don't think that you have to. I mean, there's some small churches that are spending a lot of money on video and more power to them if that's what they think they should do. But, you know, the content has to be good. The bottom line is the content still has to be good.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's been our thing, is that we haven't shifted what we're doing with the like recording quality, because we're staying with the, like, these are the worship songs that we're doing for our weekend services as we plan them out across the board. And so the worship that's online, those songs are the same songs we're doing at any of our multi-site campuses. And so we haven't tried to do anything drastically different with that, but we have tried to up the audio quality and the video quality of what's going online, because we want that to be more engaging. We want that to be something that really is a level that people can really dive into and really dig into, that's different than what our live weekend service is. And that was a shift that we had to make initially. And now that we've done it and have a process to it, it's kind of one of those things where we're probably going to keep doing that, because it is just really good and people like that quality online. So we've kind of created our own monster, and we're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, hey, so what kind of encouragement do you have for tech folks out there? Cause I'm talking to tech folks. I know you are too. Everybody's working like 70, 80 hours a week. It seems like there's no end in sight. What are you doing with your leadership to kind of manage expectations? Cause I think you and I actually talked about this just a tiny bit when we were talking at Philo, of just managing the expectations of leadership and how, you know, cause this thing's clinically not gonna, is it going to end? We don't know. Is this what we're going to be doing for a very long time? Possibly. Right. How are you helping your leadership to manage expectations of the technical department?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's something that I'm very thankful that our leadership here at the church is as good as it is. They really do a good job at trying to communicate as much ahead of time as they can, but that might be a day, you know, at this point, you know, day exactly. or two, you know, at most, I hope for a week. And so one of the things for me, I joke with my tech team all the time with the new normal. You know, one of the things that I talk about with them is like, you just almost have to have the sense and the saying of, that's fine. That's okay. And it's one of those things where, hey, we have to change this.
Right.
Okay. Let's change it and we'll work together to make it happen. The big thing that I've talked to the leadership team about is just be in communication with me, you know, just even if it seems like a ridiculous ask, or, hey, you've got 2 days to set up an overflow room. Okay. Let's get it done. And so it's been, for me, a lot of it has been really checking my own ego and checking my pride, which I'm talking to a lot of you tech guys out there, just work on that, please.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a number of you that know what I'm talking about. And, it was a big struggle for a number of years for me, because, you have to be able to know that you're the guy that people are counting on. They may not know that they count on you, but you're the guy behind the scenes. You're the guy coming in early. You're the guy staying late, or gal. You're the person that's coming in to make sure that the lights are programmed for the online recording. You're the person coming in to make sure the tech sheets are printed for the weekend for the volunteer teams. You're the person that's setting up an overflow room. You have to be able to help where it's needed most. And you have to be willing to check your ego and say, okay, I'll help out. Let's get this done. Then if it's something where you can talk to them later on and say, hey, can you give me more notice on that stuff? Okay, do that afterwards. Have that conversation, you know, after you get the thing done, if possible. So one of the things I was talking with my wife about as I was going through, like, what is one of the sort of Dan isms, you know, that is unique to Dan in this church setting. And Van, I'm kind of an extrovert like you, which we're in that rare 5% of extroverts with less,
right?
But, you know, one of the biggest things that I bring to the team and to the weekend is that, my attitude drastically affects the attitude of the others around me. So if I come in grumpy and grouchy and things are off, or you know, I'm in a bad mood, there's a good chance that that's going to rub off on the volunteers as well. But if I come in with a joyful heart and I come in with a good attitude and I come in with a smile on my face, yeah, the things could still go wrong that are going to go wrong, but my tech teams could be joyful about it and they could see a glimmer of hope because, well, Dan's not upset about it. He's smiling about it still. So I guess it's not that bad.
Right.
So that's my advice. Try to keep positive about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're looking at you. They're, and you know, we're, I was just talking to, Justin Firesheets about this. We interviewed Justin Firesheets a couple of podcasts ago. And,
yeah,
we were just talking about how, you know, you are pastoring these people as the tech director, production manager, whatever. They see you, more than actually it was Sean Miller who we interviewed, I think right before this one. I don't know. Time has no meaning, right? But I think Sean Miller's podcast was the one right before this one. But, you know, we're just talking about how they look to you as the technical director, production manager, whatever, as their pastor, because when there's something wrong, they're going to call you. They may not even be able to get to the senior pastor in your church really relatively easy. And so, you know, you're the one that's going to have to deal with it. If they've got problems, they're looking to you that everything's going to be okay. You know, yep. I think one of the biggest compliments that I've ever received, in my technical directing days was when people would say, yeah, man, that was insane. But then I looked over and you weren't panicking. Like you were just like, it's okay. Well, just go to the next thing. We'll fix it. You know, like
switchers on fire.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's, right. It's fine. I just, yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, like run up to the video room and like the switcher doesn't work. Okay. Just walk over here. You're going to switch the whole rest of the service on this router. And here's how you do it.
Yep.
And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, there's just these two buttons. Just flip back and forth between these two things and you'll be fine. But there won't be any words on the screen. That's fine. It's okay. It's all right. Just it's one service. I'll figure it out after when we're done. Really? Yeah. That's what I don't know. There's nothing else. This is what's happening. Yeah. And so if you're just like that, people are going to go, oh, okay. So I don't have to be completely flipped out. Nope. No, it's fine.
Right.
I remember telling one of my guys, when I got to a church one time, the former technical director, he yelled a lot, which was really unfortunate. And I have a big, loud, booming voice, but I never yell. And so the sound guy who I loved ended up one being my favorite people on earth. Is he yelled, and he wasn't like this really. He was just a meek mannered guy, but he was yelling back at to the stage, back and forth. Yeah. And I just leaned over to him and I said, hey, there's a couple things we don't do when I'm in charge. We don't yell and we don't run.
Yeah.
And he goes, what? I go, we don't yell or run. I said, yelling is rude. There's no reason to do it. You have a talkback mic right here. Pick that up. Just talk to them. It's totally fine. And we don't run because when we run, people in charge panic. When they see us run, then something bad's happening. Now, if the building's collapsing and you need to get people out, yes, do that.
Yeah, then you can yell and run. Yeah.
Right. But if it's just something technical, you can walk briskly. Don't run. Yeah. Because we always want to know, we always want to let people that we serve know that we're handling it, that we're going to take care of it. And when you look out of control, they feel out of control and then we're not doing our jobs. And so,
yeah,
it's definitely true. I haven't always been like that either. I had a really hard time when I first started out to where I was very intolerant, especially of volunteers, which is crazy because I love people, but I was very intolerant of their lack of knowledge. And my technical director, who was over me at the time, said that we're the professionals. They're just serving. What are you doing?
Right.
They don't know. If you want them not to screw up, then you need to train them not to screw up. That's part of your job. So that's what you're getting paid for. And I was like, oh, okay.
You know, that level of ownership, that level of taking that level of ownership of, you know, the only person you can point at and fault is yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. If your CG operator doesn't know where to find the file for the video message, why is that their problem?
Yeah, you need to do that. I mean, as production manager, as technical director, your job is to facilitate their success. And that's a huge thing. I mean, everybody's going to fail. I'm sure you're the same as I am.
I'm awesome at failing.
Yeah. If you're a sound guy, I can't tell you the number. I won't say which church it was, but it was a pretty high profile church that I worked out for a while. And I can't tell you the number of times I accidentally ramped up the wrong fader for the pastor's mic on a Sunday as I wasn't looking down and I thought I had my fader on his mic and it was the next one over.
Yeah.
And let's see. I did that at a graduation this year, like 2 months ago, I did the exact same thing. So it happens. Everybody messes up. Everybody makes mistakes. Yep. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing. I've literally been mixing for 40 years and I still throw up the wrong fader occasionally. Now I'm super good at getting the right fader up really fast.
But it
still happens. So how do we even expect our volunteers who don't do this as a profession?
Yeah.
To do it. And then hold them to that standard. We just can't, it's bad. We have to have a good attitude no matter what happens. And they look to us for that. You'll have a way healthier tech team if they see you being that way all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the one getting paid to get yelled at, not them.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's just how it is. So
it is. And that's the best thing with working with volunteers, because same thing, you know, like I said, I grew up volunteering. That was part of my upbringing. And the reason that I kept coming back to it and loving doing it was because I had people that showed me how to do it and showed care and concern for me and cared that I was there and treated me with respect. Those go a long way. And
well, people want that. People want to be part of a team. People may come to serve in the tech team because they think they're nerds, but honestly, they ultimately stay because they feel like they're part of something.
Yeah.
They feel like they're part of a family. They feel like they're being taken care of, that they're being heard, that people just want to be heard. That's the biggest thing. People want to be heard and, they want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves.
Yep.
You know, and that's the bottom line. It's not about, we talk about this all the time. You know, if you just need people to push buttons, that is the wrong motivation for getting volunteers.
Right.
That may be a motivation and that's fine. I mean, obviously you need people to push buttons, but that can't be the driving factor of your tech team.
No, not at all.
In any way, shape or form. Not sustainable. It's kind of always a disaster. That's why a lot of churches used to just hire everybody. They just hired the entire tech department because they needed, they didn't care about building a team. They cared about, does everything work on Sunday?
Yep.
It just all has to work, you know?
Yeah. But looking at the technical arts as a ministry is, it's like, you know,
completely different. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I worked at two churches where all the mission critical jobs were staff. The non-mission critical stuff, that's where we put the volunteers. And there's nothing wrong with that. And in a lot of churches, that is still the way it is. But if you're looking at pure ministry, which most churches are doing, you have to approach it with very different eyes and a very different philosophy. And that's actually, I enjoy that much more. I mean, I was on two church staffs where the majority of us were pros. And that was great because it's always fun working with peers. You know, it's always working with other trades that are good at what they do. You know, that's always fun. There's no question about that. But it's way more fulfilling as a leader to have a bunch of volunteers than there is to have a bunch of professionals. I think.
It is. And I've got a daughter. She's a teenager and pray for me. And but the coolest thing is seeing her serve. She loves serving with me. And you know, I've got from that, she has a number of her friends who also want to serve. Right. And it's at the spot where I honestly have pretty much an entire weekend team made up of just these middle school kids. And they do a fantastic job. Yeah. I mean, they've come up through the ranks. They've started on camera. They've learned how to run a camera. They've become a video director. They've kind of worked their way through. But this weekend, I've got a high school junior who's going to be the service director, you know, directing the whole team. And the video director is a high school sophomore, and the camera operators are high school freshmen or eighth graders. Right.
That's awesome.
And they do a fantastic job. And it's just because I've taken that time to be, you know, communicating with them, you know, being caring to them, helping calmly show them, hey, here's how we do things. Here's the way this works. And then bottom line, just have fun with it.
Right.
You know, be creative, do something that would blow me away. Cause I sit there and go, I would have never thought to do that.
Yeah.
I love it when that happens.
Yeah. So. No, that's the best. That was my favorite part about being a tech director, was raising up young people. Is the, it's the, like the best, thing, there is. And, I learned very early on that you never underestimate young people, never underestimate them. They just want, they need guidance. They need to feel like they're part of something, and they will amaze you almost every single time as to what they can handle, what they can take. And they'll step up if you challenge them to do it.
Yep.
You know, we hear a lot of criticism right now about young people.
Right.
And I'm just like, they just want, like, what they, you know, it's like, they want you to walk beside them and help them. They don't want you to wag your finger at them. That's what we do a lot now. We wag our fingers at these young people. And I'm like, no, they want somebody, they want our advice. They want us to tell them, these things, but they just don't want us to beat them over the head and say how that they're stupid. You know, and so if you don't do that, if you say, I expect you to be awesome and I'm going to help you get there, man, you'd be surprised at how many of these young people will step up into that and go, you know, because right now a lot of people are not being challenged. A lot of young people are not being challenged to be great. They're just not. And I think in tech, it's a great opportunity to do that. So, so I'm glad you're doing it. Cause it's really awesome. Cool. Well, Dan, I so appreciate you doing this. Thank you, for being on. It's been great. Hours flown by. If people want to reach out to you, cause you, I know that you're somebody who loves to answer questions. You love to help churches, as you've said. And I personally know that you're just, you know, somebody who loves to help other techs and just answer questions. You're a veteran. You've been doing this a long time. You got a ton of knowledge. For those of you, hopefully you guys have gotten a glimpse into Dan, who Dan is a little bit, but I've known him for a while, and he's just such a great guy and loves the church, loves tech people, and is an extrovert. So he has no problems talking to you.
That's right. Yeah. Please
so,
reach out to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So where can people reach you? What's the best way of getting a hold of you?
Yeah. So, Facebook and Facebook Messenger are probably my two biggest things right now. So you can just search for Dan Olson on there, and it's Olson with an E. And then, Twitter is, at Olson Dan, and same with Instagram at Olson Dan. I was one of the early onsets of those. So I actually got to pick my name. So so those are the two kind of the best ways to get a hold of me.
Dan, thank you so much, and
thank you for having me.
And we will talk to you all later. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.